This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 7.06 a.m. BFM 89.9 on Monday, 11th February 2019, and we're having a look of how the U.S. market did in last Friday and what's in the news as well. So on Friday, stocks closed mostly higher, despite lingering fears of the U.S.-China trade tensions. The Dow Jones fell about 63 points only, or 0.3%. S&P rose about 1.8 points just under 2,700, and the Nasdaq gained about 10 points. So I think the rally took a breather last week. It remains one of the best annual start for the U.S. in almost three decades.
And the U.S. China trade war remains a core issue for investors, with Asian markets picking up the selling baton after U.S. Donald Trump confirmed reports that he had no plans to meet with Chinese President Xi Jinping before the trade truce end March 31st.
Well, Julian, you're saying that the rally, it's the best annual start for U.S. equities in almost three decades. I wonder if that's going to be kind of like a sign of things to come. Can we expect this momentum to continue moving forward for the rest of the year? And what's driving this rally, I wonder? Because, you know, there are definitely a lot of lingering questions when it comes to the U.S.-China trade war, whether or not the March 1st deadline, is that going to happen? Will they call a truce, or are they still going to continue fighting?
Yeah, certainly questions that we would have to seek answers from our guests. And on that note, we have Kingsley Jones, who's founder and chief investment officer of Jevons Global, on the line this morning. Kingsley, good morning. We have seen some earnings from various tech companies like Apple, Facebook, Snap, which all rallied. Did anything in particular catch your eyes, your eye from their results?
Well, I think it was actually a fairly mixed season for technology stocks. Amongst the majors, Microsoft posted a pretty decent result in terms of the progression of their business with cloud and so on. However, in other areas, there's a fair bit of either margin pressure with Google or softer revenue growth with companies like Amazon. Facebook surprised on the upside. I guess expectations were very low, but they certainly posted some good numbers. However, for us, I think the most impressive results were in the mid-tier companies. Software firm Atlassian, which is listed in the US but out of Australia originally, they continue to post strong revenue growth and developing a very strong position in developer-oriented tools like Jira, their bug reporting system. So they look pretty good and they're executing well. They're sort of well-placed to become a kind of mini Microsoft. The other standout for us was in the chip sector, which, although it was generally weak, one company, Xilinx, posted really excellent results, and they're just benefiting from demand for their type of chip, which is used in AI applications.
Where do we go from here for tech? Are you a buyer?
I think that we're late in the cycle for tech. I would be buying certain companies. As I mentioned, we don't own Xilinx, but that was a particularly strong result from them. So I think it's a time when one needs to probably pull back from those companies selling aggressive growth expectations and concentrate more on those that have good margins and solid profitability, possibly on lower multiples. And that would be companies like Microsoft and Cisco for us.
Well, Kingsley, taking a closer look at the sector, how have the social media giants like the likes of Facebook, Twitter and Snap performed?
Well, Facebook, as I mentioned, was really the standout performer from a financial perspective. A lot of people were concerned that with all of the scandals that had been hitting them, that they would take a misstep on their own execution. But that didn't seem to be the case. Snap obviously posted better than expected results. It's been under a cloud for some time. But I think it's still pretty much a marginal player. Their problem is that Facebook's Instagram is really steamrolling their own application in the youth market. Elsewhere, I mean, Twitter's muddling along. It's profitable, but we think it faces a bit of an uphill battle with credibility now. I mean, having Donald Trump as one of your leading opinion makers on the platform probably doesn't help very much there in terms of their overall positioning with advertisers. And I just point out that amongst all of these media plays in digital, you know, the New York Times stock, interestingly enough, has outperformed over 3 years, every single one of these. If you look at New York Times over 3 years, has outperformed Facebook, Twitter, Snap, and Google. So I think that there's a bit of a change in the weather, as it were, for a lot of these digital players.
Thanks so much. And that was Kingsley Jones, Founder and Chief Investment Officer from Jevons Global in Sydney. And guys, also big news as well, because Elizabeth Warren has confirmed her presidential bid for 2020. I'm just wondering if corporate America should be worried because, you know, she's going to make some big changes.
Mm. Yeah. So over the weekend, she sparked off her campaign with a speech where she promised to tackle economic inequality, pledging to fight corruption in Washington, level the economic playing field, and reform the U.S. democratic process. Her signature issues includes income inequalities, taxes, and also regulation of corporate America.
I think the question now is whether or not she would improve U.S. international relations, you know, in comparison to Trump. And I guess she has also been very critical on globalization and international economic institutions like the IMF. So it'll be definitely interesting to watch, you know, where she takes it.
Yeah, interestingly, she's got a very strong political track record in advocating closing loopholes for lobbyists, prohibiting foreign governments from hiring lobbyists in Washington. Also, she co-sponsored a bill to raise the U.S. minimum wage to about $15 an hour. $15 an hour, that's quite a lot. Mm. That's pretty good. Almost a UBI-type level. And she does not support U.S. government takeover of certain industries. So definitely a critic of Trump and definitely not somebody who is friendly to the corporations over there. And I guess we got to watch out for the approval ratings. I guess if she becomes more popular and she is very vocal in the U.S., then the market may start pricing this in.
Mm. However, she is a supporter of ultra-millionaire tax on the 75,000 richest families in the U.S. that she say will result in trillions more in federal revenue. Warren has long been a staunch critic of Trump, and during his speech on Saturday, she called Trump the latest and most extreme symptom of what's gone wrong in America, a product of rigged system that props up the rich and powerful and kicks dirt on everyone else.
Well, aside from Elizabeth Warren, I think who else has announced, I think, this bid for presidency. I think we have this Kamala Harris. She's a first-term senator from California, announced her own bid. And if she wins, I think she'll be the first African-American and first woman to serve. She was actually the first African-American and the first woman to serve California's Attorney General. And if she wins, she'll be the first Black woman president.
Cory Booker is also very popular, another presidential hopeful, hoping to change the criminal justice system over there in America. He's a rising star in the Democratic Party at 49. He's the youngest senator in the race as well.
Mm. So there's Kirsten Gillibrand as well, a former corporate lawyer who's first elected to the House of Representatives in 2006 after becoming a senator in 2009 when she filled Hillary Clinton's empty seat. Gillibrand shifted sharply to the left, taking a tougher stand on gun laws, a more liberal approach to immigration.
Yep, so definitely Bernie Sanders is in the race. A lot of his fans are hopeful that he would throw his bid in as well. But now let's turn our attention to the Bank of England, which has last week lowered its growth forecast. And on the line is Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy for Mizuho Bank in Singapore. Good morning, Vishnu. Good of you to join us. England lowered growth from 1.7 to 1.2 and added that there is a 25% chance for a recession this year. What are your views on this?
I think my views would be the same as the Bank of England, to be lazy about it. But the bigger point about this is the economic slowdown that they're forecasted is not out of sync with a further deceleration in global growth that we're looking at. I mean, China is slowing down. The U.S. is set to slow much faster once the fiscal stimulus fades in the second half. So it is not surprising that the UK is also looking at this, but in particular because of Brexit risks, I think they've factored in some holdback in investment activity, some disruption to activity, and really how much the UK slows will depend on the brand of exit Brexit adopted, on which there's no clarity. So a recession certainly cannot be ruled out if you see a much steeper drop-off in things like the pound, which would raise costs a lot more, and so consumers will be less able to spend on items other than necessities. So that would be the first thing that drags the economy. But let's also bear in mind that businesses will also have a lot of uncertainty, so they'll hold back on hiring, on spending, on investments. these will also take off. And I think the most pernicious one could be if for some reason there's panic and there's a big drop in the equity markets and the property market, then we'll get what you call the negative wealth effect, where people feel a lot poorer or they owe a lot more on their mortgages than they are, than their housing is worth, their homes are worth. And that also sees a more prolonged negative effect. So we don't know what case will play out. We are hoping that the worst case will not be the one that results.
Vishnu, is Brexit jitters solely to blame for the Bank of England's forecast? How worried would we be about the UK's economy's performance this 2019?
Right. I mean, I think the position on that is that you know, Brexit is really the elephant in the room that's hard not to mention, and optically it's very difficult to look at all the other reds around. So the essence is that, yes, Brexit can be the big swing factor and could turn out to be very negative, but the economy was already slowing despite, you know, things like output gap closing. But putting those technicalities aside, the global economy is shrinking, slowing, and you've got reduced demand for exports as well. So these things were going to weigh on the UK anyway. So we were looking at growth around the ballpark of 1.5% if a Brexit scenario is a soft Brexit. But if it's a slightly harder version of Brexit, you get growth going closer to 1% than 1.5%. So it really depends what kind of a negotiation they are able to pull off this time around.
Vishnu, given everything that you've said, what's your forward-looking outlook for both the UK and Europe?
I think both the UK and Europe will have some wobbles along the way. Europe, I think for them, the main risk is a political one. So how they manage a diversion in views between them and, say, Italy, the growing political unrest in France and things like that. Their very near-term worry is how Germany is going to negotiate a slowdown due to exports dent, manufacturing dent, and also due to the higher emission standards that are kicking in, that's going to drag on the auto sector. So that would be Europe's problem, whereas UK has got a far bigger issue as in how they're going to negotiate the Brexit and what they're left with and the political stability after that. So there's a greater or there's a wider berth of uncertainty, particularly if the banking sector gets hit and you get banking investments pulling out of the UK. So the uncertainty around UK's outlook is far greater, whereas Europe is not in a good place either. So if you look at it, neither the pound nor the sterling are coming out as stellar investment choices. And so both are slacking a bit.
Good stuff. Thanks so much for joining us. And that was Vishnu Varadhan, Head of Economics and Strategy for Mizuho Bank in Singapore. And coming up next, we'll be speaking to Tony Puan on the My Salam Insurance Scheme, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.